program. I'm Lori Rubenson, talking sports, having fun with you here on The Fan at. We're going to throw out the phone number, 888-808-1019. Be the first caller. Call in. Let us know that it works. The phone lines were down, apparently. Connor was texting me. Phones weren't working a little earlier, but thankfully everything back up seems to be. So please, somebody, make that phone call and let us know. That way we'll know that all is good. You can also always join the program also on Twitter, on X. Hit me up there. I will read comments on the air at L. Rubenson, WFAN on X, on Twitter. Producing tonight, Mr. Connor Green, my sidekick for the evening. We're with you until midnight. A lot to do. We've got, obviously, Knicks. Oh, by the way, Knicks are in the NBA Finals. we know who they're playing, the Spurs. We'll toss that right out there. Question of the night for you to call in on. Knicks, Spurs. Number one, who you got? Who's going to win? How many games? And why? What is your key to the series? Toss that out there. So we're going to dive into all of that. Of course, Yankee fans, you want to call in and relish a 13-run inning. Feel free. What was your favorite at bat? It's tough. There were 18 of them in that inning. It lasted 43 minutes. It was one run short of tying the all-time Yankee record set in 1920, 14 runs in an inning. 13 runs. What was your favorite at bat? You can hit us up on that, 888-808-1019. And Mets fans, Juan Soto hit a grandy today. Grand Slam Soto. His numbers have been berserk for the last few weeks. And overall in the season, they look pretty damn good. But Soto is on a heater. He is clearly having fun. He seems to love the kids, the young players, his young outfield mates in Carson Bench, who it was love at first sight, it seems like, between those two, and now with A.J. Ewing as well. Apparently, they call each other the psychopaths defensively, and Soto's all over that as well. So you want to call in on the Mets. My question to Mets fans, so if Yankee fans, your question was, what was your favorite at bat of the supersized mega 13-run inning? For Mets fans, simple question, really. What will it take for this Mets season to feel like it has relevance? You know, when does this feel relevant again? Obviously, we started the season, we thought the Mets were quite relevant. But, you know, here we are. And they had a horrific April. Just an absolutely atrocious, hellacious, you fill in your adjective of choice, awful April. And with that, got dead and buried. And they've had hiccups, ups and downs through May. Got swept by the Marlins, and now they turn around this series and they sweep the Marlins and put up a 10 spot today. And the offense looks like it's clicking. So for the Mets, here we are as we close May and enter June. The Mets going, I think it was after today, I think it's 16-12. I'll have to look that up and make sure. I think it was 15-12 going into today, so that would make it 16-12 in the month of May. So a decent May, respectable May. Mets are 5.5 games out of the third wild card spot. At what point do you say, all right, season's back on? With all the injuries, with all the problems, with all the mistakes made by the president of baseball operations, with as angry as Mets fans are at David Stearns, and you know, a lot of you are angry at the owner, with all of that, 5.5 games back with the third wild card, and they're about to embark on a brutal road trip and the upcoming stretch, a whole bunch of winning teams. We can go through that, but it's one winning team after a row, you know, in a row. Is that going to put a kibosh back on the season? Do you need to see them get through that? So, Mets fans, that's your question. We're going to start tonight. And I promise, Yankee fans, I've got a couple of points I want to make about the Yankees. We'll dive into that, dive more into the Mets. But we're going to start with the Knicks. And because, I mean, holy heck, we have a team that is on the cusp of a championship. We have a team in New York that has a chance to win a ring, a title. And I respect the New York Liberty. I respect, you know, soccer. I do. But of the four major men's sports in this town, obviously hockey, Rangers 1994. Obviously football, Giants, you know, 2011 season, they won the Super Bowl. Obviously baseball, Yankees, 2009 season. And then you have the Knicks, 1973, the last time a New York basketball team, men's basketball team, NBA team, won a championship. And for a city that has so many professional sports teams in the four major men's sports, we have more than everybody, and yet we haven't had a title in any of those four sports, men's sports, since the Giants of 2011. And a lot of it, for a lot of our teams, has been just bleak, pathetic, scraping the barrel. And the Knicks were the standard bearer for all that was wrong. For so long, the 90s Knicks were wonderful. And they came up short in 1994. If you were aware of Knicks basketball at that time, then you know. I mean, that spring, you had Rangers and Knicks and the Garden. And we thought we'd get both titles. And the Knicks, of course, John Starks, if he had just hit one more shot, the Knicks could have won a title. They didn't. Patrick Ewing never gets his ring. 1999, the last time the Knicks were in an NBA Finals. And that year, for people who are trying to hearken back to that and somehow compare this series to that one, or even I saw somebody, you know, Sal Licata posting, oh, we need revenge, you know, on Twitter for that series. Let's avenge it. I went to one of the games at Madison Square Garden back in 1999. You know, for people who want to earn their, you know, I'm not trying to one-up a lot of you listening are massive Knicks fans. I'll just say, you know, I am one of you. So I was there in 1999. Connor, I, back in 1999, Knicks playoff, you know, NBA Finals, Knicks Spurs. It was my birthday. It was my birthday party. And at the last minute, I had a friend say, for your birthday, I got two tickets. Do you want to come? And they were good seats. I got two tickets. You want to come to the Knicks game? So my problem was, I'm throwing myself a party. I have people coming to a restaurant, and it's for me. And the Knicks, you know, like, I thought, well, you know, it was on my actual birthday. And anyway, I call everybody and say, all right, come earlier. Made the whole party, like, about, yeah, I don't know, moved it up an hour. Because I figured I'd get home and I'd watch, and I was a DVR. And the whole point of this is, of course, I was going to watch the game and watch most of it at home and all of that. But you knew this was a team. Patrick Ewing was out, injured, not playing. That's when the whole Ewing theory developed, a team that could play better without its star, mm-hmm. or whatever. But, like, LJ was hurt, playing hurt. Like, we knew. It was the Spurs, the beginning of that Spurs dynasty. And it was, you know,
and it was a lot of Sprewell magic that got them there, yeah, shortened season.
And Allen Houston hitting a shot and all that. But it was like, you know, we knew we were going to lose. I knew we were going to lose. I went to, you know, so I called everybody and actually left my own birthday party midway. The cake wasn't even out yet. And my mom is there. And I'm like, all right, Mom, you know, do me a solid, which she always did. Like, hit, you know, she'll handle the credit card and paying for the thing because I'm out of here and I'm heading over to the garden. And I just stiffed all my friends. I'm like, sorry, like, if you know me and you love me, then you know that I got offered Knicks finals tickets, so I'm out of here.
It's more important than my own birthday party.
Yeah, it's more important. And, you know, and if you have a problem with it, then you wouldn't still be my friend. But anyway, you know me well enough, my friends, that, of course, I'm leaving my own birthday party because I got offered a Knicks finals ticket. I was there in 1999. So no hard feelings to the Spurs. There's nothing to avenge. They were a much better team than the Knicks. There was no like, oh, I really think the Knicks are winning that. 1994, I thought we were winning the whole thing. I thought Knicks were going to win the ring. Patrick would get his ring, all of that. That was 94, but not in 99. 99, the Knicks were not the better team. But this time, look, I get the Knicks won't be favored. And I've been seeing all this horse crap on Twitter where opposing fans or even some, I don't know, amateur media types or whatever, bloggers or whoever, are posting stuff that is ranking the players in this series and total disrespect to guys like OG Anunoby and ranking De'Aaron Fox over OG, you know, BS like that. Look, I will be honest with you. The best player, for all the Knicks fans who want to be like, Jalen Brunson, maybe he plays the best in this series, who knows? I will never underestimate Jalen Brunson. But the best two-way player in this series, overall player in this series, is Wemby, Victor Wembanyama. Because right now, and we just saw it against OKC, and we've been seeing it down the stretch, he's the best player in the NBA. He's next. He's him. He's the heir apparent. He's the chosen one. The torch, Michael Jordan to LeBron James to Wemby. That's it. Of seeing transformational greatness. Not just great players, not even all-time, you know, sort of superstars or whatever. This is like just like historic greatness. Like that's what we're seeing the beginning of with Wemby. So I'm not diminishing the job at hand. But this Knicks team and the historic run that they've been on, this is joy. This is heaven. This is basketball nirvana. And people can say, look at who the Knicks played and all this sort of stuff. The best 11-game stretch, most dominant 11-game winning streak, 11-0 of basketball in NBA history, regular season or playoffs, that they have done this against playoff teams and just chewed up these teams and spit them out. Get out of here. Swatted them away. You're not in our league. That every one of these Knicks players playing their role so elegantly and the sum is so much better than each individual part. And enjoy this, a team that is fulfilling their potential, not just winning games, but fulfilling their potential, being their best basketball selves of what this team can be. We're seeing that on offense, on defense, on effort, on 50-50 balls and hustle plays. All of it. Historic shooting. Can it continue, especially with a layoff? We saw game one in the last series against the Cavs. Knicks a little rusty at times before they turned it back on. They know that now. Can they prevent that with this such a long layoff? We'll see. I think it will be a great matchup. And we'll over the next few hours, we will dive into some of the important matchups and the keys to this. Who's going to guard who? Who's the X factor? All of that. But savor it, Knicks fans. And enjoy every second of this and this very special team that we're having the privilege and the pleasure to come along for the ride with. All right, I'm going to open it up because we do have phone calls. What a joy that is. I really appreciate you all. Didn't think we'd have them tonight. I've done it before when we first came to this studio, this station, the studio here, moved from Queens, Kaufman Astoria Studios. We move here. It's so exciting. We first move in and oh my God, this place is so much nicer than, you know, the studio there, and everything's brand spanking new. And for anyone who was around, I don't know, what is that, 16 years ago or something like that, when we came from Queens, the phone lines would go down from time to time in those first weeks, and you'd be here on the air and suddenly boom, oh, sorry, it's an overnight. Yeah, it's a call-in show. You got no calls. And back then, if you're talking about 16, 17 years ago, whatever it was, Twitter and the internet was not as fired up on social media as it is now. Now I can be like, all right, if I have to, I'll go into your tweets and read some of those, and we'll have an interactive show. We can live with it. But back then, it was interesting. Anyway, we live in interesting times, and we live in times when the New York Knicks are in the NBA Finals. Let's hit some calls. First up, let's go to Robert in Yonkers. Hey, Robert, how are you?
How are you doing, Lori? How's everything?
I'm doing well. Happy to be here. Happy the Knicks are in the finals. No complaints.
Have you ever been to Australia?
Have I been to Australia? No, and I actually am fairly well-traveled. You could name a number of places, but I have not.
Curious. Do the Mets go down the toilet the opposite direction in Australia? I mean, not for nothing.
So you're saying because it is winter and summer in opposite places that maybe the Mets are somehow in an alternate universe, somehow in a different climate, better?
You never heard that, like, the toilet flushes the other way in Australia?
So you think your point just is that that the Mets are somehow better there? Yes.
Well, they're okay. The same place.
Yeah. All right.
I mean, Yankees and, you know, the Knicks, I mean, everyone's like Knicks in six. I think it's going to go like seven. Just my opinion.
Okay. Thanks for that, and thanks for the toilet flushing. Connor, on the plus side, the phones do work on the, you know, and now,
they do work at least.
We start strong with, the Mets being flushed in the opposite direction. And I get there are times, but I thought I was, you know, opening strong and the Knicks and that caller, all it says is like wherever he's from and, you know, and it just says Knicks and he gets on with, have you ever been to Australia? The
Yeah, that wasn't what he told me he was going to talk about, so I don't know.
Flush the Mets into Flushing Bay?
No, I was not aware that was his topic, unfortunately.
Right. Okay,
at least we had a caller and a topic, so that's good.
There you go. Let's try another one. How about Ben in Connecticut? Ben, if you make a toilet flushing joke, I'm hanging up on you.
Lori, huge fan of yours, by the way. I remember when you guys first moved over to the new studio, and I remember those calls. You know, not coming through in the whole thing. long time listener.
Thank you.
Of course. Let's start here. You know, the Knicks, and listen, this series is going to be played, so it doesn't really matter if they're disrespected in the media or in betting lines or whatever. But what I will say is that it's pretty amazing how people just are running with this, like, the East was easier. Yeah. I mean, yes, the East was easier, yes, but, like, if you put the Spurs in the East, like, what would they have done that was better than what the Knicks did? And, like, the Knicks beat everyone by, you know, 30 points and, you know, had the greatest, most dominant run in NBA history, playoffs or regular season. Also, before the Eastern Conference playoffs started, I was watching these same pundits say that Boston was going to represent the East in the finals.
Right.
Okay. So the Sixers were so bad that they could beat Boston and knock them out, who they picked to win it all.
Yeah.
But then the Knicks run them out of the gym and we're somehow like, oh, we waltz here.
Yeah. Also to your point, look, I respect the Timberwolves and they were diminished by injuries. That's a good basketball team, but let's just take a look to your point. If the Thunder had beaten, I mean, this was game seven, had the defending champ Thunder made it all the way, people would have been singing their praises and saying, hey, they got past the Spurs, which I get. But they also beat the Suns in the first round. Then they beat the Lakers. Lakers without Luka. Lakers, you know, Reeves was on, like, you know, fumes, barely there.
Right.
And then, yes, it's a great win against a, you know, obviously Spurs Thunder. If you look at the Spurs path, the Trailblazers, you know, no offense to Portland, but I don't know, is Portland somehow so much better than the Atlanta Hawks?
Right.
Are they that much better than the Atlanta Hawks? Who, by the way, to your point also, Atlanta Hawks came into the NBA playoffs as one of the hottest teams in the league.
Yes.
They come in, everyone's like, oh, the young Hawks. And the Hawks, if you recall also, did one of those things where they were maneuvering things. They kind of wanted the Knicks. They were like, oh, we're going to rest and do this. We don't care. We'll get the Knicks in the first round. All right, well, have at it, you know? So, you know, to your point, it's every series, it was, you know, the Knicks are only they're disrespecting who the Knicks are playing after the fact when the Knicks ran over people.
Bingo. Exactly right. It's like, you know, these teams are, oh, they're so bad. And you ask why they're bad. Well, they lost to the Knicks by 40 points. Okay,
right.
Well, I mean, they didn't lose to, you know, they didn't lose to Boston by 40 points. They knocked them out of the playoffs with Tatum back and the whole thing. But the other thing I wanted to touch on is that I actually think starting on the, obviously, home court advantage, you know, people think it's huge or not so huge. The Knicks have been an amazing team at the Garden this year. I think they're the best home team in the Eastern Conference. But I think starting on the road is actually kind of nice in this situation. Like, there is just massive, massive pressure on the Knickerbockers. And to know that, like, listen, the goal when you start on the road is you win one of two. And there's just, I think there is maybe something that's a little, like, some shade lighter than starting at the Garden, and it's like, you better win both right here, right now. I wondered what you thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, if the Knicks can split, you know, I agree, there's a certain kind of pressure to starting at home, especially. What's interesting here is, on the one hand, I'm about to say, yeah, especially knowing you're coming back to Madison Square Garden. Flip side of that is, to give respect to this young Spurs team, I don't think Victor Wembanyama will be the least bit scared about playing at MSG. I think he is a player who has shown. Oklahoma City is a really tough environment to play in, by the way. That is a tough road environment. And he's shown that he can rise up, that he likes the challenge, he likes the lights, the spotlight, all of that. That's one. Two, there's some young guys on that team, in particular, Stephon Castle and Derek Harper, who are from this area, locals. You know, Castle went to UConn, or, you know, they played their college ball, like, in our area. Harper, of course, Rutgers. And so I think, and then you get Champagne as well. Champagne went to St. John's. So you've got all these guys who are local guys, and they've played in Madison Square Garden. And they, you know, they, to them, especially the Big East guys, like, they love the arena. They're excited about it. You want to come back and play in front of friends and family, but I don't think it will be too big for them. We'll see. I hope the Garden is a massive home court advantage. And I do think they're actually, as much as it's the finals and Spurs fans, a lot of them won't want to sell their tickets, I do think with the secondary market, there will be Knicks fans down there in San Antonio. But yeah, I mean, look, to your point, there is pressure, I think, on the Spurs to hold home court. I think they'll be a good road team, as they've proven, and just won a game 7 on the road, the Spurs. But the Knicks are a very good home team, have been all season. And so, yeah, if the Knicks can get a split in San Antonio and come back to the Garden with a chance, win both, go up 3-1 in this series, yeah, suddenly for this young Spurs team. The other thing I'm really curious about in this series, I don't know if this matters at all, but when you watched both teams celebrate making it to the conference finals. And I get, for the Spurs, the young Spurs, to get over the defending champs in seven games on the road was way more of a mountain than the Knicks trouncing the Cavs in four. So that was anticlimactic for the Knicks and a huge moment for the Spurs. But I wonder if there is a bit of an emotional letdown, just a little bit, for the Spurs in game one. And the Knicks, all business. This is a business trip. Haven't achieved anything yet. You can tell. You look at, they were happy to get the NBA Finals, but Jalen Brunson, this is a business trip. And setting that tone. I just wonder, is there a little bit of an emotional letdown from the Spurs that almost a little happy to be there? I know that, of course, they want to win the whole thing. But could we see that, and is that enough for the Knicks to steal a game one? Knicks won two out of three this season. The first one, the NBA Cup, neutral site, Las Vegas. A little hard to judge on that one because also Victor Wembanyama was coming back and easing his way back into playing. So he was limited to, he actually didn't start that game, played 25 minutes, was limited in that way. And the Knicks do win. And then they split, the team split the Knicks too. But it does show that, the Knicks can beat the Spurs. The Knicks can be a good matchup for the Spurs. And that was before the Knicks transformed in that Atlanta series and on into this team that is their higher level best selves, where we're seeing a different level of basketball from them. And can they tap into that? Can they continue to be the hot, deadly snipers from three-point range that we saw in previous rounds of the playoffs? Because the defense is going to get better against the Spurs. There's no doubt about that. But should be a really fun series. All right, let's go to Ross on Long Island. Hey, Ross, how are you?
Hey, doing well. Thank you so much. Happy to be on the call, on the radio with you. So the Spurs remind me a lot of OKC last year. They're young. They're very dynamic.
Yep.
And they're full of energy.
Yep.
So my point I wanted to make was Jeremy Sohan, who was on the Spurs earlier in the season, do you think there could be any insight on some of the strategies or some of the plays that the Spurs may run that he could help our team, the Knicks, overcome and hopefully, find ways to beat the Spurs? Obviously, I hope the Knicks could win without that. And I hope the Knicks do it. But do you think there's any insight he could provide?
Yes. I don't know that it's on plays per se, because and thanks for the call, Ross, and it's an interesting question. So for people who didn't know, Jeremy Sohan, who's now on the bench for the Knicks, played most of the season with San Antonio. And the Spurs then drop him, and the Knicks pick him up. And talented young player, but it's less about him playing this series, but to the Ross's question, is he can he provide intel that would be helpful for the Knicks? You mentioned plays. Can he share plays? I think with the NBA, it's not the same level of plays and playbook that you're talking about with, let's say, the NFL. Where knowing a team's plays is super helpful. In the NBA, I don't think the plays are as extensive, so that if you have film on a team and what they've been doing, which the Knicks will have three games worth of head-to-head matchup play against themselves, as well as now having seen them and scouted them in the playoffs for what they're trending and doing right now, you kind of have a sense of them and their plays, but I do think there's something he can share in intelligence, where is there something he knows about a weakness of a player? And maybe it doesn't show up on film, but is there something that, something about this team, the mindset, you know, if he knows from practice, if you get into a certain guy's chest in a certain way and you bump him, that you set him off a little bit. Is there something, little things like that? The obvious will be who likes to go to their left or right or things like that. Like, you know all those things. But is there something where if you defend in this way or you attack this player in this way, that that's a little bit of a vulnerability? Yeah, I think it certainly can hurt, and I think it can help. And it reminds me, it's funny, when I thought about the Knicks having this insider, this guy who would understand, yeah, tendencies. And look, from a play standpoint, maybe does understand some of the favorite tendencies of that coaching staff, or are there tells or things if they're going to call or execute a certain inbounds player. I have no idea. I doubt there's that much, but if there is a little edge, you take it gladly. And it just reminds me of the kind of thing that historically we would see in the NFL, where Bill Belichick would, you know, now it's about to be a playoff game, or even just a regular season. It's a regular season game, and the next thing you know, the Patriots have some player they're picking up on a practice squad from their, you know, upcoming opponent, and trying to glean that sort of information. So I guess, like chicken soup, it couldn't hurt. That's what I think. Let's go to Ethan in Jersey. Hey, Ethan, how are you?
Hi, Lori. Thank you so much for taking my call. Glad to be on the radio with you.
You're welcome. I'm delighted that you're here calling in, and we're getting to talk about the Knicks.
Yes. So I wanted to bring up two things. One, your story about going to the finals on the day of your birthday really resonated with me because my dad, actually, I was lucky enough to be at game one of the Eastern Conference Finals against the Cavs.
Wow.
And my dad, so I'm in college, so I didn't really have the money for the ticket, but my dad treated me because I was doing well in school, and we have a little rivalry going because he's a Nets fan, because they're in New Jersey and stuff like that. But when I got into basketball, the Nets were no longer in New Jersey, so I ended up being a Knicks fan, so we had that little rivalry. But he said, you know what, you did well in school, you never know when you're going to have this opportunity to go to a game like this again. And long and behold, that experience, just being in the building during that epic comeback, is something I will carry with me for the rest of my life, regardless of the outcome of the finals. I think the Knicks do win this series, and there's a couple reasons why. I think a lot of the times that we see teams will throw their big men onto Josh Hart because his lack of spacing at times.
Yep.
And I feel like Josh Hart has really turned the corner, specifically during the Philadelphia series, where he's been knocking down his three-point shots. And another thing, too, if they're putting Wemby on Hart, that means that they're going to put Devin Vassell or, like, another guard on Cat. And I feel like this is going to be a series in which Cat is really going to have to take advantage of his size and get to the rim and make something happen, not only as a scorer, but as a playmaker. I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that, because Cat has really shown his ability to make something happen, regardless of, like, okay, if the double comes, he kicks out for a Landry Shamet three. Or if he has a smaller person on him, he'll take him to the rim and finish. So what are your thoughts on that?
So, great points, two thoughts. One, on Josh Hart and his three-point shooting. So I think what the last caller was getting, what he was getting at is, what are the, you know, who's guarding who? What's this going to look like in terms of matchups? And one of the things we do anticipate is Victor Wembanyama is, he's defensive player of the year. He's the best defensive player and defensive weapon in the league. OG Anunoby, to me, is a first-team all-defense. He was robbed. He should be first-team all-defense, not second. OG, we'll get into OG in a second, but Wemby is the best defensive weapon in the league and changes how a team attacks. What we expect is that Wemby will guard Josh Hart. And by doing that, or at least some of the time, some of the time he'll probably guard Cat. Some of the time, though, he will guard Josh Hart. And when they put Wemby on Josh Hart, what they'll do, obviously, is slack off of Hart, dare Hart, just like we've seen before, dare Hart to make three-point shots. And then Wemby will sink into the paint and play defensive rover. And with his wingspan, that means he will try and block shots in the paint. So he's going to cut off your drives. Or he will come out from that, you know, sort of, you know, imagine a large Velociraptor with those arms and everything. He will come out and pounce on you, on any three-point shooters and close and do that and try and block shots and all that stuff. But the way to stop that is the guy he's supposed to be defending has to hit those open three-point shots when he's being disrespected. I think two things will happen. One, they'll start on that. And we'll see what Josh Hart does. I will guarantee you that Josh Hart spent a good part of today shooting, working on his three-point shooting, and he has been practicing constantly. And, you know, he's taken hundreds of three-point shots since the last time the Knicks had a game that mattered. So I think Hart can be up to the task, but the other thing we saw is that when it mattered, like in game four, that Mike Brown will be flexible and quick enough to change that first sign of trouble. I'm not saying he won't play Hart, but he will go, I think, pretty quickly to Landry Shamet. And the version, if we get, I don't expect Landry Shamet to shoot 11 of 12 from three-point range in the NBA Finals like he did in the Eastern Conference Finals. But if we can get a reasonably hot 40-plus percent three-point shooting Landry Shamet, then the Knicks would have, if you look at the rest of the starters, take Hart out, put Shamet in, you have five players who can all hit from three-point range. You've got five shooters on the court, five wide. So you have a center, a point center that you can initiate offense from in Karl-Anthony Towns. You have a point guard in Jalen Brunson you can initiate offense from. So either of those guys can be the point and run point, and the offense can initiate from them. And the team can then get into motion and set screens and do all of that. But if you've got Shamet in hitting three-pointers and Wemby's supposed to be guarding Shamet, he'll have to respect him. If you're going to leave Shamet wide open, he'll hit those shots. So that's all it takes, is one of those guys has to hit those three-pointers at a reasonable, average to above average, ideally, clip. And if it's wide open, a good NBA three-point shooter should be able to hit a really good percentage if you leave him wide open. So Wemby won't be able to do that. That is an advantage the Knicks have, and it was a problem for Oklahoma City. Their three-point shooting, Shea just didn't have enough help offensively. And not enough three-point shooters hitting in the games that they lost. And that was an issue. So can the Knicks keep up that hot three-point shooting? If they can, they have a real good chance to win this series. As for Kat, and what do I think and expect there? He's been tremendous. I'll toss this out as a question for all of you. An opportunity, let's call it. Here's your opportunity, if you would like to take it, to call in with an apology to someone on this Knicks team or coaching staff or front office or ownership. Who do you owe an apology to? Is it Mike Brown? Were you one of those people who, you are a Tibbser through and through, and you just thought, and even now, and even in the last few weeks, and even this past week, you just cannot get yourself to admit that James Dolan, the owner, Leon Rose, the president, were right to fire Tom Thibodeau, who we all love as a head coach, who built the foundation and we will always appreciate, but they were right to fire him and right to hire Mike Brown, and that we would not be seeing this level of beautiful basketball, of the Knicks reaching this transcendent place of their best selves, of basketball nirvana, that we're seeing that because of the adaptability, the offense of Mike Brown, as an example, Karl-Anthony Towns, Cat, point center. So who do you owe an apology to? I'll tell you right now, mine, my Knicks apology, mine's Karl Anthony Towns. I've liked Towns as a player and a person, but I have found him frustrating over the last couple of years. And in particular, his defense, at times, what looked to me like not ultimate effort on defense, consistent effort on defense. And then, of course, the ticky-tack fouling would make me insane. I thought he was not as high of a basketball IQ player as it turns out he is. I thought he was not his kind of, you know, footwork, athleticism, foot speed, you know, all of that. I just didn't know he had this in him. And that if you initiated the offense through him, it could, his, I thought he was a good passer. I didn't know he could be a great passer. And defensively, the second part of the season and into the playoffs, just getting better and better, the effort that he's putting out defensively, I didn't know he had him in that, had that in him. He's playing high effort, high IQ basketball right now. And is a huge reason, of course, obviously, why the Knicks are playing as well as they are. So that's my apology to Karl Anthony Towns. I am sorry. I did not know you had this in you. And I am grateful that you have shown it. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Mario in Long Beach. Hey, Mario, how are you? Mario, going once. Mario, going twice. Are we having a phone issue, Connor? Or is it just a Mario issue?
I think just a Mario issue.
Okay, Mario, you can call back if you want, and we'll put you on. All right, Connor, you know what? Two things here we're going to do. One, we are going to take a break in a moment. Mary and Mike and Michael and Mitch, all of you, I see you. We will get to your calls. I think we lost a call. I think my buddy Robbie and Lennox was on. Robbie, if you want to call back, get you on too. But we will get to all of your calls. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will have Jonathan Macri from John Macri, founder of Knicks Film School. They do a great job and want to talk to him and break down this series and cover it in all the different ways to provide you with both inspiration and analysis. How's that sound? All right, so quick break. We'll be right back with John Macri from Knicks Film School, and then Mary, Mike, Mitch, if you want to hang on now, we'll get you right back on after that.